Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, everyone. Just wanted to remind you that for all of April, all new patrons get limited edition creepy logo Mardi Gras beads, just as a special thanks. You'll still get all the rewards at whatever tier you decide to join. The Mardi Gras beads are just a little something special to help us celebrate this year's Creepboy Camp. To find out more, check out patreon.com/creepypod. No.
This is Creepy, a podcast dedicated to sharing the most famous, chilling, and disturbing creepypastas and urban legends in the world. Whether these stories truly happened or are simply fabrications is for you to decide. These stories may contain graphic depictions of violence and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
All right, we should be there in a few minutes. What's the line on John's current mental state?
Let me see. Right now, it's even odds that he's naked and afraid. 3-2 odds that he's naked and content. 2-1 odds that he has any clothes on at all. There's also money on him thinking that he's actually built the camp by himself, that he's plotting an elaborate revenge for October, a dozen other side bets that stretch credulity with the average person, but are right in John's wheelhouse.
Did anyone bet that he'd try to throw himself in front of the bus while yelling gibberish?
No. Why?
Because he's running at the bus right now, yelling gibberish.
Let me in! Let me in! Let me in! Let me in! Quick! Open the door! Let me in! Let me in! Let me in! Let me in!
John! What the hell are you doing?
Everyone down! The stormtroopers finally found me!
Well, didn't see that one coming. Are you kidding me? Where?
Out there!
I don't see anything.
Listen! Everyone down!
John, those aren't laser blasts from stormtroopers. That's just the sound baby alligators make.
Bet no one saw John thinking baby alligator lasers were trying to kill him.
Actually.
Seriously? Who?
Who do you think?
Are you kidding me? How does Owen always guess these things?
I know. I owe him so much money.
I hear he takes beads as payment now.
Good to know. Okay, John, you can get up now.
Is it safe?
I doubt it, but there's not lasers.
I want to believe you. I really do. But in the likely chance that you're wrong, and I am being hunted by a galactic dictatorship, I'd like to stay on the bus.
John, there are way worse things to be worried about than your world turning into some sort of sci-fi space opera.
Oh, yeah? Like what?
Like a dark woods demon. Jacob cursed as he pushed through the thick underbrush, trying to make his way to the tree stand he had built earlier in the summer. He was certain that this location would give him an optimal line of sight to the neighboring field, in which he frequently saw large herds of deer. This was going to be his year, and he was sure of it. "This is the year I bring home my trophy buck," he thought, as he recalled the events of the day so far. He had awakened at 4:30 a.m. He began to prepare for a long day in the woods on the backside of his farm. His first order of business had been to locate and rescue his gloves and camouflaged hunting gear from whatever undisclosed area of his home that his wife had hidden them. He would most assuredly need them this morning to protect him from the bitter cold November morning. How could it be this cold, this early in the year? He wondered, as he started to work on his second task of the day, which was to prepare a breakfast that would stick to his ribs long into the day. He wasn't entirely sure what he wanted this morning, but he finally settled on toast, country ham, and scrambled eggs that were just a little too runny. He topped it all off with a large cup of coffee that had left a bitter taste on his tongue. In fact, he could still taste it. After accomplishing tasks 1 and 2, he packed himself a bologna and cheese sandwich for lunch, grabbed his Remington .30-06 hunting rifle, a thermos of coffee, and headed out the door. He loaded his gear into his truck and pulled out of the driveway, and turned right onto the one-lane blacktop road that led to the backside of his property. After about 2.25 miles, he turned right again off the blacktop onto a dirt road that was gouged with deep, mud-filled ruts. He had traveled about a half mile down that pitiful rut-filled excuse for a road when he came to his desired location. He got out of his truck and loaded his gun and sauntered off into the woods. Jacob had gone little more than 500 yards into the densely wooded tree line when he began to wish that he had put on an extra layer of clothing to shield him against the chilly morning air. 10 minutes out of the truck, and he was already cold. And it was made worse by the cloudy, overcast day and the wind that was blowing steadily through the trees, making the autumn leaves rattle like dry bones. Oh well, he thought. It's going to be a good day anyway, especially if I bring home a big one. Jacob took about 10 more steps when an uneasy feeling began to creep over him. He felt as though someone had stepped over his grave. He got the distinct feeling that he was being watched. But by whom? This was his property, and it was posted. No one had permission to be on his land. He had to be alone. But if he was alone, why couldn't he shake the eerie feeling that was scratching at the base of his skull? Something was off today. There was a deafening silence there in the forest. No birds or insects. Only the sound of the wind in the trees. Convincing himself that it was nothing more than a case of nerves, he continued to press on until he came to a clearing not far from his tree stand. Stepping into the clearing, Jacob saw the remains of what appeared to be a large deer. He wasn't quite able to make out what he was seeing from this distance because the sun wasn't completely up yet, and the forest was still enveloped in shadows. Jacob walked closer to get a better look and found that he had been correct. It was a deer. A large 8-point buck, in fact. Looking at the remains, he felt a sense of dread come over him, and icy fingers danced along his spine. Something about this kill just didn't seem right. The throat was completely torn out, and the stomach was ripped open, plus several of the internal organs were missing. It was the most grisly thing he had ever seen. This definitely wasn't a coyote kill, and no hunter would have done this. They would have taken the head to have it mounted. What could have done this? He wondered. A fear like nothing he had ever experienced before began to wash over him in waves. What is going on? He thought. At nearly 225 pounds and well over 6 foot, he wasn't one to give in to fear, but now he couldn't seem to calm down, and his heart was beating like a trip hammer. The feeling that he was being watched was getting stronger by the minute, and he couldn't shake the feeling that he was moments away from a bad situation. He slowly started to back away from the mangled carcass and head back to his truck and back to safety. No more than 6 steps into his journey, his blood turned to ice in his veins as a deep, guttural, wailing scream shattered the eerie silence and what was left of his courage. He had grown up on the farm all his life and had been an experienced hunter since childhood. He was familiar with every animal in this part of the state. Not even a cougar, bobcat, or bear could have produced the scream that had torn through the early morning forest and filled him with such a bone-chilling apprehension. Primal fear now gave way to stark terror as he chambered around into his 30-06 and turned around only to find that there was nothing behind him. His mind raced with confusion, and he was confronted with a million thoughts at once. What should I do? What could it be? Should I run? Am I going to die? His survival sense kicking into overdrive, Jacob decided to continue on his previously contrived plan, which was to go to the truck and get out of there while the getting was good. Slowly and cautiously, he made his way toward the perceived salvation of his vehicle, silently praying every step of the way. With 300 yards separating him from his only avenue of escape, Jacob began to hear heavy footfalls off to his left. He could hear the crunching of withered leaves, sticks, and debris that littered the forest floor. Summoning every ounce of courage that remained within him, he forced himself to look in that direction. And that is when he saw the dark silhouette that followed him through the densely tangled forest. Quickening his pace, he redoubled his efforts to reach the truck and get to a phone, and call the sheriff, the game warden, or anyone that would listen. He couldn't tell what it was that was stalking him, but he could clearly see that it towered more than 7 feet and was incredibly massive. Jacob couldn't help but think that he was about to become a national statistic, a person who left home under normal circumstances and just disappeared without a trace. How many people, he wondered, go into the woods and just vanish, and the authorities just assume that they have become lost or injured or been the victims of animal attacks, with their bodies never recovered? Please, God, don't let that happen to me, he thought, as he drew closer and closer to his truck. 75 yards became 50, and 50 became 30, and 30 became 10. Like a miracle, he was back and opening his door. Throwing his rifle inside, he pulled himself up into the cab and started the engine and hit the gas. But the truck went nowhere. He had parked in a large mud puddle, and now the tires simply spun, slinging mud 30 feet behind him. Oh no, not now, he thought. I can't be stuck, not now. Allowing himself to think, Jacob remembered. This truck is a 4-wheel drive. There's no way I can be stuck. Reaching down, he locked his truck in 4-wheel drive and was prepared to punch the gas and leave this nightmare behind. Unfortunately for Jacob, some nightmares are not so easily left behind. And there is nothing worse than a nightmare you can't wake up from. And Jacob was about to learn that the hard way. Hearing something to his right, he instinctively turned, and immediately wished that he had not. It took him maybe a half a second to turn his head, but he would have given anything in the world to have that half second back, because it was the last moment that his world would ever seem normal again. In that split second, his world changed. It was no longer a place where the world was light and safe, where he was just a husband and a father and a guy that liked to hunt and watch football on the weekends. That reality had evaporated away like a morning fog, and all that was left was a world where monsters existed, and things really went bump in the night. And now, an ambassador from that nightmare realm was standing just outside his passenger door, a visible reminder that his world had been turned upside down. Jacob screamed as he stared transfixed on this escapee from a horror movie. In his most terrifying, fevered dream, he couldn't have imagined that such a thing could exist. It was hideously ugly, easily standing 8 feet tall, with a thick, muscular body. It looked very apish in appearance, but then again it didn't. There was just something about that face that was just wrong. Almost like an obscene amalgamation of man and animal that had gone horribly awry. It was the most terrifying thing he had ever seen. It was completely covered with thick, shaggy black hair that was matted in areas with God only knows what. And it walked on two legs, not four like you would expect from some kind of animal. What was this thing that had shattered his perception of reality? Was it a demon? Was it a werewolf? It can't be, he thought. Those things don't exist. Maybe it was some kind of reject from the island of Dr. Moreau. Whatever it was staring at him, and it did not look happy. The menacing juggernaut threw its enormous head back and let out a blood-curdling scream that resonated throughout the surrounding area and seemed to vibrate him to his very core. Shocked back into action, Jacob threw his truck into gear and took off as though he were being chased by the very hounds of hell. Jacob, mind racing, wondered what he was going to do. How will I ever feel safe on this farm again? He thought. Are my wife and children in danger? Where did this thing come from, and will anyone believe me? The whirlwind of thoughts that swirled through Jacob's mind came to an immediate stop as he slammed on his brakes and nearly slid off the road. In a state of disbelief, Jacob sat staring at the large hackberry tree that laid across the dirt road and blocked his path, preventing him from reaching the blacktop and guaranteed safety. How is this even possible? He thought. I just came down this road not even 30 minutes ago, and this path was clear. However this tree came to be across the road, it was painfully obvious to Jacob that he had to get that tree moved if he was going to make it home. Since he had neither chain to pull the tree out of the road, nor did he have a saw with which he could cut up this unexpected barricade, he was left with few viable options, one of which was walking, which he discounted almost immediately. The most logical course of action that he could come up with was to call for help. His best friend Kenny Patterson owned the farm just over from his. If he were home, he could bring a saw and cut up the tree for him. Jacob, with his nerves still frazzled and frayed, reached into his glove box and pulled out his cell phone and clumsily dialed Kenny's number. The phone rang 6 times, and Jacob was about to give up when Kenny answered the phone and said, "Hey, ugly. What do you want this early in the morning?" As quickly as he could, he related the recent events to Kenny and said, "Man, please hurry. I'm not kidding. There is something out here." Kenny, hearing the shakiness in his friend's voice, assured him that he would be there in a matter of minutes. Jacob thanked him and hung up the phone, and braced himself for what he was sure would be the longest few minutes of his life. Sitting motionless with bated breath there in the truck, every sound made his imagination run wild with fear and expectance. Even though little more than 3 minutes had passed since he had spoken to Kenny, it felt as if hours had passed. Each tick of the clock seemed to be an eternity. Jacob frequently checked in all directions for any sign that nightmarish monstrosity had pursued him. In every shadow that the forest and this irritatingly cloudy day produced, he thought he saw the shape of the black beast that had followed him out of the woods, and he was afraid that he would lose his sanity long before Kenny arrived to clear the tree out of his pathway. After what seemed like a lifetime, Jacob heard the sound of Kenny's old truck sputtering up the road, and in just moments, he was able to see the old red Chevrolet as it made its way closer to him. Jacob's spirits lifted when he saw his old friend, and a sense of relief washed over him as he realized that he was no longer alone. Stepping out of his truck, Jacob said, "Man, what took you so long? I asked you to hurry." Kenny, with an indignant look on his face, said, "What are you talking about? You only called me 11 minutes ago. I think I made pretty good time." Jacob could hardly believe that only 11 minutes had passed. It seemed like so much longer. After apologizing to his friend and telling him exactly how happy he was to see him, both men walked over to the fallen tree and made a discovery that startled them both. The tree had not broken. It had not been cut. It had been pushed over and completely uprooted. All around the tree were large bipedal footprints that had a somewhat human appearance to them, But if they were human, the owner would require a size 28 shoe. Jacob and Kenny looked at each other, and then without a word, went to work on the tree. Kenny took a Husqvarna chainsaw from the bed of his truck and began to cut up the fallen blockade. Meanwhile, Jacob pulled the logs and debris from the road. Mission accomplished. Kenny put away his saw, and he and Jacob were about to get in their vehicles and leave. But before either man had even opened their doors, an ear-splitting scream that would have filled a banshee with paralyzing fear erupted from the woods behind them. Warily, Jacob walked over to Kenny and whispered,
"That's what I was telling you about. I don't know what that thing is, man, but it looks like some kind of monster. And I think we need to get out of here, now."
Kenny, who looked as though the blood had drained completely out of his face, became very pale as he said to Jacob,
"Jacob, man, I've never mentioned this to anyone before now, but over the last few months, that thing has been killing off a few of my cows. Their throats are usually torn out, and the bodies are mangled and broken. And I didn't want anyone to accuse me of being crazy and making stuff up, so I never said anything about it. But that's the reason I rushed over when you called. I've heard that sound a few times off in the distance at night, but never this close. So I think you're right, old buddy. It's time to go."
Cautiously and with a sense of urgency, Jacob and Kenny climbed into their vehicles and expeditiously made their way to the blacktop. Turning left, both vehicles began the 2.5-mile trek that led back to Jacob's house so they could decide what course of action should be taken. Jacob could feel the temperature drop as snow began to gently fall. He reached over and turned his wipers on as snow began to pelt the windshield harder. As he passed his neighbor, William Springer's farm, he noticed a herd of deer grazing in the field that bordered his own property. Having put a bit of distance between himself and the nightmare he had just encountered, Jacob felt a renewed sense of security as his fatigued nerves began to calm. Not willing to let this opportunity pass him by, Jacob turned on his hazard lights and pulled to the shoulder of the road and signaled Kenny to do the same. Kenny instinctively knew what Jacob was thinking as he pulled in behind him and turned his ignition off. Getting out of his truck, Kenny said,
"What are you doing, man? We need to get out of here, now."
Jacob said,
I know,
and we will in just a minute.
I just can't turn this down, man. I have to take the shot. That is a 6-point buck standing there. It's not the trophy that I wanted, but at least I won't go home empty-handed. And after the morning we've had, I think we deserve a little something good."
"All right. Just take the shot so we can go. I still don't feel right about this," Kenny said.
Steadying his rifle across the hood of his truck, Jacob zeroed in on the buck and prepared to fire. That's when he heard Kenny make a gasping noise and whispered,
"Oh, my God. What is it, man? What's wrong with you? Raise your scope 3 inches, he said.
Raising the scope, Jacob immediately saw what had been the cause of Kenny's alarm. Standing just outside the tree line in the edge of the field was the creature that they had left behind, not even 5 minutes ago. Was this thing following them? Was it after the deer? What was it doing? Jacob watched the creature through his scope for a full 30 seconds before it ever moved. And when it did, it ignored him and the deer and started to lope off toward William's barn that was just about 500 yards from where the woodland demon had been standing. Jacob called out to Kenny and said,
"Kenny, call William and tell him there's something trying to get in his barn. I know he has at least 2 mares with foals in there, and if that thing gets in, it will kill all of them."
In an attempt to be rid of this monster, werewolf, Sasquatch, Wendigo, or whatever it was, Jacob fired a shot, but missed. The creature turned in their direction and glared at them through red, hate-filled eyes, and then began to run toward them at full steam. Kenny, who was still on the phone with William, screamed at Jacob to get in his truck and go. Jacob did as he was told, and Kenny followed suit. Starting their trucks, Jacob and Kenny both raced to Jacob's house as though they were driving on the NASCAR circuit. Arriving at home, Jacob, gun in hand, ran inside to get a phone book so that they could call the game warden and the police and get some kind of animal control out there to get rid of this thing. Jacob had just stepped out on his front porch when they heard gunfire coming from over at William's place. Dropping the phone book and running back inside, Jacob grabbed his 12-gauge pump shotgun and some shells and handed them to Kenny, who took little time in loading it. Jacob and Kenny, now locked and loaded, walked together to Kenny's truck, preparing to mount up a rescue for their neighbor, William. Simultaneously, both of them stopped in their tracks as an uneasy but familiar feeling crept over them. And Jacob's Rottweiler and two German Shepherds began to whimper and ran under the front porch to hide. Kenny, whose throat had suddenly gone dry as a bone, whispered to Jacob and said,
"I have a really bad feeling about this."
No sooner had the words escaped his lips, they heard a deafening scream erupting from the forest off to their right, and the creature exploded from the trees in front of them. Until now, neither man had been able to fully appreciate the colossal size and scope of the beast. But standing less than 30 feet away, they were almost overcome by the sheer magnitude. Jacob had seen it up close earlier from his truck while sitting down, and had guessed the height at maybe 8 feet. But now, standing there looking up, he could tell that this fellow was 8.5 or 9 feet tall, and would tip the scale at 800 to 1,000 pounds. It had inhumanly long arms that bulged with thick, ropey muscle that were easily seen beneath its long, shaggy black hair, which covered it from head to toe. The chest was larger than a 55-gallon drum, and there was little doubt that it could have pulled the arms off an ape. And now it glared at them with malevolent intent. Jacob and Kenny both opened fire without hesitation. The creature screamed with rage as the bullets tore into its massive body, knocking it to the ground, but not killing or seriously injuring it. Jacob and Kenny watched speechless as it crawled into the tree line, struggled to its feet, and limped away. Jacob ran back to the porch and grabbed the phone book and called the local game warden. Nearly 2 hours later, Gene Trauber, the local warden, showed up to take their statements and told them that he had been called out to answer numerous such reports in the area, but he wasn't sure what to make of all these reports. "Guys," he said, "I don't know what to tell you. There is no animal in this area, or any area for that matter, that fits your description. I'm not saying I don't believe you. I just don't know what it is." Jacob, whose face was reddened with anger, said, "Come here. Here's the blood from where we shot it. And here are the footprints." A look of complete confusion washed over Gene's face, and he asked if they would care to go with him as he tried to track it. Jacob and Kenny agreed, but they said they weren't going without a gun. Gene stated that he planned to take his gun as well. All three men loaded their guns and set out following the deeply impressed tracks and droplets of blood that had fallen on the withered leaves. They followed the trail for about a mile until arriving at a creek that was located deep in Jacob's woods, where the tracks that they were following were joined by others just like them. Some were smaller, but at least one set was larger. Deciding that the safest course of action would be to return home, they all went back to Jacob's. None of them relished the idea of staying out in the woods longer, since there was now apparently more than one creature, and the cloudy, overcast day made the forest seem even darker than it normally would be this time of day. Back at Jacob's, Gene informed them that there was nothing left that he could do but file it under an unknown animal sighting, which made both Kenny and Jacob anything but happy. Jacob and Kenny spent the next couple of days trying to warn their neighbors to use caution when they were out in the forest. Most of their friends just laughed at them and said they had probably seen a bear or something, No one believed them except William, who had seen it himself the same day they had. He had even taken a shot at it, but missed. Jacob, William, and Kenny knew what they had seen, and they knew it was still out there, and they didn't care who believed them and who didn't. Over the next few weeks, more and more neighbors began to take the story a little more seriously, as family pets began to disappear, and others were found brutally mangled. Other farms in the area began to find their cows and other livestock torn open, with their throats ripped out. Just a week after shooting the creature in his yard, Jacob's own Rottweiler was found dead, with its throat torn out, hanging across a limb in a tree in his front yard. It almost seemed like a revenge killing. A few days later, one of William's new foals died the same way. The foal's mother had to be put to sleep because she had gone into shock over whatever she had witnessed there in the barn when her foal was killed. Some people in the area still don't believe. They think the whole story was made up. But Jacob and Kenny know that there is still something out there in the forest. They still occasionally find tracks or a slaughtered cow or goat. They still hear the blood-curdling screams off in the woods at night. They know that there is still something out there watching and waiting, biding its time. Something cold and cunning and cruel. Something not human, with a taste for blood and revenge.
Well, what do you think?
I can honestly say that my focus of concern has shifted.
So you feel better?
That was supposed to make me feel better?
Did it?
Actually, kinda. Wonder what that says about me as a person.
Seems on brand, all things considered.
I think it's safe to leave the bus now, don't you think?
No.
Why?
I guess I'd rather not take the chance. I've seen some things since I've been out here. And nighttime isn't the best time. In fact, I learned from one of my favorite survival experts, Tex Montana, that it's best to teach yourself to fall asleep standing up like a horse, so you can be ready to run at even the slightest sound. Why'd y'all have to come out here at night?
Alright, it was 25-cent martinis at Commander's Palace. And I mean, we got lost.
Well, that's easy to do out here in a land that time forgot.
Oh, come on. It can't be that bad out there. You've survived on your own for this long.
Yeah, well, I'm starting to worry that's only because of some elaborate plan that I'm not aware of to see me as uncomfortable as possible.
I bet I've seen worse.
Yeah, sure. Big talk.
I'm serious. I even started a blog about it when it happened. I can even pull it up on my phone to show you.
When what happened?
Dead animals have been showing up at my house recently. Look, I'm not going to start a blog post dedicated to weird and awful experiences that have happened to me, nor will I write a book about paranormal activities that I've witnessed. In truth, my life has been pretty mundane up until this point. I mean, I won't lie to you guys. Sure, I'm superstitious and religious, but that belief is based purely on faith, not evidence. Well, a little context probably wouldn't hurt, would it? I live at the end of a rather small neighborhood. The woods and a house awaiting purchase are all that exist behind my home, and ahead of it is a rather lifeless street of maybe half a dozen houses. I swear to you, the homeowners of said places are almost never there. But I suppose that's what a 9-to-5 job does to an adult. Truthfully, I find the barren landscape calming and soothing for the most part. There's a strange feeling of comfort that comes with limited isolation, and that's as best as I can describe it, really. There was, however, one night in particular that shook things up a bit, for lack of better words. Now, for a night so important to me and the events of this story, I find it odd I can't seem to remember the exact date. For some reason, I found myself up until almost midnight. My parents were tired and, of course, told me not to stay up too late. Furthermore, I remember them asking me to take the dogs out before I went to bed. I was much obliged to do so in return for staying up late, so I promised I would. After watching a bit of Netflix, my eyes wandered down to the clock within the TV box. It had been almost an hour since my parents had gone to bed. I rubbed my eyes and felt a bit tired myself, so I grabbed my dog's leashes and took them outside to walk. I walked down the long gravel driveway and stepped into the street. I let my flashlight illuminate the road in front of me and continued down the path, allowing the dogs to finish their business. Once they were finished, I turned to go back to the house, but I stopped dead in my tracks once my light hit a certain area of the road. Just a few feet in front of me sat a lump on the ground I hadn't seen before. I had to restrain my dogs with quite a bit of strength as they seemed to notice it as well and attempted to reach it. I decided that I'd bring them into the house and go back out so I could see what the lump had been. As I approached it a second time, I bent down at the knee and let the light hit it. That was when a knot turned in my stomach. It was a frog. A baby frog at that, lying belly up. Several thoughts ran through my head. One, the frog was still there, which, I mean, is, upon viewing it, I suspected a predator had killed it. However, the frog was still on the road, dead. Not a single part of it was eaten. However, the stomach was slit down the middle, and the intestines sat beside the amphibian. The animal's eyes seemed to have been removed as well. Maybe this wouldn't have seemed so odd if it weren't for the size of the creature. It was so small in size that such injuries seemed intentional. I shuddered a bit, and then decided upon going inside again, having had enough of the mess before me. I made sure to lock the doors that night. Don't ask me why, I just felt as if I had to. When I went outside the next morning to go to school, I went to the spot I had seen the dead frog, and there was nothing there. Assuming that whatever had killed it cleaned up the remains, I walked to the bus stop. On the way there, I kept my eyes peeled for any other dead animals on the road. There were none. When I got home from school, I decided that I would ask my mom about what I had seen. Perhaps she would have an explanation I hadn't previously considered. After listening to my story intently, she suggested that maybe a neighbor's cat had been the cause of it all. I nodded my head and accepted her answer. I mean, it would make sense, after all. I've heard of cats randomly killing small creatures all the time. That night, and the next few nights that followed, I saw the frogs on the road again, always in close proximity to my home. This still unnerved me, but I didn't pay much mind to it. I simply ignored the bodies and walked my dogs as normal. That was until one morning in particular. Another day of school had arrived, and I did my normal daily routine. I got up, showered, got dressed, ate breakfast, and brushed my teeth. I exited the house, ready to go to the bus stop. I walked down the driveway, as always, and then I stumbled back. Right in front of me was a squirrel, completely snapped in half. The two pieces of its body that had been disconnected were perfectly symmetrical. It sat in a pool of its own blood, an expression of shock and horror etched onto its face. I gagged and quickly ran past the body. I pulled out my phone and texted my mom, explaining to her that there was a mutilated squirrel directly in front of our driveway. I quickened my pace and arrived at the bus stop, where I then got a response from her. She said she would check it out. After a few minutes, she texted me again, asking me where I had seen it. I stared at her text in disbelief, unsure how she could possibly miss such a sight. I described exactly where it was, and then waited a few more minutes. Again, she responded, and my eyes widened at what she said. Where I had seen the animal, morbidly attacked and bloodied, she saw nothing. Chills ran down my spine, and I was genuinely shaken to my core. I tried asking a few of my school friends if they had experienced anything similar to what I had. None of them had any idea what I was talking about. Much to my surprise, the nights after that seemed to calm down. I didn't see any more frogs or animals on the road, nor did I see any on my way to school. It almost seemed as if the strange anomaly had stopped on its own over time, and for that, I was thankful. There was a strange period of time where nothing happened at all. Looking back, I was foolish to think it had ended there. No, I should have known all along. It wasn't the end of the storm, but the calm before it. This peace I experienced came to an abrupt end just 2 weeks ago, on a night that seemed just like every other. My father had been the one to take the dogs out this time because I was busy walking towards the mailbox. I had neglected my duties to get the mail earlier in the day, so now I had to get it around 12 due to my procrastination. I grunted in annoyance at the fact that I wasn't allowed to go to bed until I got this chore done, but I accepted it. I had brought it upon myself, after all. I had started walking at a slow pace, but sped up as I went along. There were woods to both sides of me because of how the roads are positioned, and I was slightly creeped out by a feeling of being watched from within the branches of the enormous trees. The streetlights had already shut off, and I was relying on my dim phone light to find my way, since my dad was using the flashlight to walk the dogs back at home. My entire body felt tense as adrenaline rushed throughout me, ready to burst into a sprint at any given noise. I resisted this urge, though, since the entire neighborhood seemed silent, strangely enough, although I believe that may have actually added to the eeriness of it all. I finally arrived at the mailbox, inserted my key into the lock, and opened it. I reached my hand into the hole and felt around. I didn't feel a single letter inside, but my hand did land on something odd. Something squishy and moist. My hand instinctively recoiled as I took a step back. I peered into the mailbox, shining the light inside so I could get a better glimpse of what I felt. When I did see it, it took all of my strength not to scream. There, inside the box of which only I had the key to open, was a frog. Needless to say, I sprinted as fast as my legs could carry me until I reached my home. I launched myself up the porch stairs and entered the room, closing and locking the door behind me, my breath exasperated. My parents looked at me strangely, and I quickly explained myself by claiming I was just worn out from my run home. They didn't seem to question this, whether it was from believing me or being too tired to wonder why the hell I was running so far so late at night. Regardless, they went to bed, and I locked the doors. I didn't remember falling asleep. But I remember waking up in a pool of sweat. I sat up and looked around me, seeing the room entrenched in total darkness. From within my room, I could hear something strange. It sounded like footsteps. Footsteps ascending the wooden stairs leading up to the front door. And then I heard the signature creak of the door open slowly. And that is when I felt my heart rise to my throat. Despite my mind screaming to my body that I should hide or stay put, my body disobeyed and opened my bedroom door. My ears were filled with the sound of my dogs barking furiously. Then the barking soon turned to something else. Whimpers of fear. And then screaming. Screaming which pierced my ears and made my heart come to a standstill. Screaming which didn't sound like my dogs at all, but rather of a human being instead. Despite my better judgment, I found myself running into the living room, where I found my two dogs, battered and bruised with cuts and scrapes all around them. They sat in place, seemingly unable to move. I could see their mouths open and their throats emitted the same human scream of utter agony and despair that they had earlier. My feet trudged across the carpet, methodically making my way towards them. They screamed louder and more violently the closer I approached, until I heard a crack. Their bottom jaws unhinged, revealing a gigantic maw. They stood on their two feet as a man would, and their once human groans of pain turned into an inhuman, ungodly shriek which split my ears, causing me to clutch my head in pain. Then, just as suddenly as they started, they stopped and collapsed to the ground, dead. I felt myself rush towards them, but I never got close. I felt something from behind me clutch me in its appendages, and I felt my body being pulled back into something sharp, stabbing me and causing me to roar in pain. I swear to you, my voice was not my own. No, it sounded like that inhuman screech my dogs released. I saw my vision become blurry until it all faded into darkness, and that was when I sat up in my bed. I rubbed my face with my hands, feeling the sweat pooling under my eyebrow. I raced out into the living room, only to see my dogs laying comfortably in their beds. I didn't sleep a wink for the next few nights after that, nor did I mention that dream to anyone until now. The night that followed, well, several nights, in fact, the woods located behind my house would cause my dogs to go into a frenzy when nearby. I remember walking them, and when close to the tree line, they would stop dead in their tracks, stare into the darkness ahead, and tuck their tails between their legs, whimpering. Even I become uneasy around the woods now, despite not having logical reason to be. But something about that place seems more ominous than it did before these events started taking place. Nonetheless, I can't walk near that place without getting the chills, and neither can my pets, it seems. Again, the calm before the storm arrived, and each day and night without a single strange occurrence was truly nail-biting. That nightmare was all I could think about, and my lack of sleep showed at school. After several detentions for falling asleep in class, my grades dropped drastically, and my parents became worried. I never told them what happened, though. They wouldn't ever believe me, especially since I seemed to be the only person who had witnessed these events. I only bring this up to you guys because I'm becoming increasingly worried. You see, these strange occurrences have picked up recently. Just as recently as a week ago, in fact. Nothing too extreme has happened yet, but I'm worried that might all change soon. The dead animals I've been seeing aren't just frogs anymore. There are birds now, and even a few more small squirrels. Each and every night I see them, and each and every night they just come closer and closer to my house. I'm not sure if what I'm experiencing is just some sicko out there messing with me, or if something more is going on within my neighborhood. All I know is that I've nothing to prove this is all happening, as each animal I see disappears without explanation by morning. I know for a fact this isn't just some cat. Look, the point is that last night I heard something familiar, something terrifying. I woke up to the sound of creaking. The creaking of wooden stairs leading up to my house, to be specific. I heard footsteps, which stopped just outside of the front door. I didn't have the courage to open the door and look, so I peered through my bedroom window to see what was outside. Once my eyes became adjusted to the darkness, I was able to spot a lump on the welcome mat just outside my door. I couldn't discern the exact features of what it was, but I already knew in truth, and I couldn't sleep any longer that night. Once morning arrived, I looked outside the door, only to see nothing, as expected. It wasn't until then that I realized I had never heard anything descend the stairs last night, which caused a large knot in my stomach. I don't know what's going to happen tonight, but I feel like it won't be good. There's no way anyone will believe me, and I don't know what can or will help me at this point. I loaded my rifle and made sure my hatchet and knife are within grabbing distance tonight. I'll also be sure to lock the doors. I'm not sure anymore. I'm just taking all the precautions I can at this point. All I can think of at this point is that damn nightmare. Small update. I made a last-second decision to let my dogs sleep in my room last night, making sure to lock the door behind me. Call me paranoid, but there's no such thing as being too safe at this point. I didn't sleep at all last night, and I didn't hear anything at all either. Finally, at about 4 a.m., I let sleep overcome me. When I got up to prepare for school this morning, I found a dead, mutilated frog right outside my bedroom door.
Man, I could really go for some frog legs right about now.
You ever get the feeling he doesn't really listen to us when we talk?
You're just now starting to think that?
How can you even think that Hell House LLC Part 2 is better than Part 1? Are you some kind of monster?
See? There's a reason he's a podcaster.
Well, if you two are still interested, I can show you around. Things have actually been progressing really well the last week. I think you're really going to be impressed.
Are you sure we should follow him into the dark?
We told the others we would check in on him. We can at least make sure he has some kind of shelter set up.
Fine. After you.
Fine. I will.
Well?
Don't rush me.
You coming? Watch your step. There's a sinkhole about 10 feet from where the light from the bus gives way to the pitch-black darkness.
It's gonna be fine. I'm gonna be fine. John is only crazy on paper. I'm gonna be fine.
You know, someone really should just stay here and keep an eye on the bus.
Start the bus! Start the bus!
What? What happened? Did John do something? Should I call the police?
What? No!
Why were you yelling? What did you see? Was camp really that bad?
I don't know. I didn't get that far. John started talking about wanting to cut the budget a little, so I pointed into the darkness and screamed to distract him.
Ah. So, right now, John is out in the dark swamp, alone, thinking there's something there with him that scared you enough to scream and run away.
Yeah. Those are the bullet points.
Ah.
Are you mad at me?
Mad? Are you kidding? I couldn't be more proud, and I think John will eventually appreciate the effort.
If he survives.
Well, yeah. If.
For more information on this podcast, including how to submit your own story for consideration, please visit creepypod.com. You can also follow us at CreepyPod on social media and YouTube. All stories told on this podcast are done so through Creative Commons Sharealike licensing or with written consent from the authors. No portion of this podcast may be rebroadcast or otherwise distributed without the express written consent of the Creepy Podcast production team and the story's author.